This is for the nerds, this is for the brainiacs, this is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back, you ain't gonna touch me. You're not gonna do nothing, you are not above me. I bet you wish you was me, I know it, I know.
What is poppin', everybody? And welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but it's not limited to, my boy, Tortua!
Wait, you don't throw it to the birthday boy?
I'm clicking, though, for the Tortua.
Yeah, oh. That's fine. Happy birthday, Landon. How Thanks, you doing, man. Birthday boy?
I just realized that we're matching, and it's my fault.
Yeah.
I had a different shirt
everybody's
on.
Everybody's got their black and gold on for 412 day. You're like an honorary Yinzer.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, your birthday is on 412.
I kind of make it in by default.
As you should forget about it. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares about the Midwesterners? What?
Very embarrassed.
You didn't know?
I had no idea what today's date was.
Oh, my God. It's Landon's birthday. It's my parents' anniversary. Of course, they got married on, Pittsburgh Yinzer Day.
That checks out.
Yeah.
How do people know the date, man? It's a Pipolinski.
Pipolinski.
Oh, the good girl.
I love it.
You only get this when somebody is not here.
Yep.
Not that someone was supposed to be today, but we had an extra camera.
Mm-hmm.
Truth. I miss the days of her being in my lap. Those days are gone already.
Yeah.
It's only been a week.
She's a monster.
Can't stop the growth.
This dog sleeps so much.
Berkshire.
She really doesn't know how big her paws are. When she wakes up in the morning, she gets very excited and comes up and just starts like boxing me in the face. And it's like, hey, this is cute now, but in about a month, this is gonna fucking hurt. And in a year, I'm gonna bleed. So we kind of gotta chill out a little bit on the roughhousing.
Yeah. You know?
The nails are getting kind of sharp.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're probably due for a trim.
Got me.
4 months now.
Got me good, yeah.
How long have we had this dog for?
About a month and
Don't
a half.
Don't you refer to her as this dog?
Yeah, what are you... What
the fuck is wrong with you?
Dog. She's a dog.
She got that dog
Jesus
in
Jesus Christ.
She's a dog, for real.
About to give her your room.
Congratulations, by the way. You're officially 25. Time for a quarter-life crisis.
Oh, I had that a few years ago.
Yeah. Maybe revisit it.
I'll double down. Yeah, I revisit this every day.
Your car insurance will go down now.
Sick.
Mm-hmm. You can also rent
you
a car
You can rent
now.
A car now. Yeah, yep. That's facts. You basically made it out of the probation period without ever
probating
actually being involved in the probation period.
Yeah,
10 more years and you can run for president.
I don't want to do that.
You'd make a good.
Well,
president.
Maybe in 10 years you might.
I'd make a terrible president.
Yeah, you'd be terrible at it.
Do you need a driver's license in order to run for the presidency?
Great question.
Probably not.
You do not. They don't drive anyways.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean, it has to. It shows competency, so
mm-hmm.
I think you have to.
Connie, your shot looks great today, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
It really does.
Maybe it shows more competency that you don't even need to drive yourself to get around.
I can't believe it's 412 day.
That's
fuck
disgusting.
Me. I could have prepped the whole show around this.
I know. I mean just...
Like, what does 412 day mean in the fucking Midwest?
It's the area code, right?
Okay, first.
Yeah, it's the area code.
I know it's the area
code. Today's,
it's 412.
April 4th. Yeah, April 12th.
So, like, what does it mean to you guys? You guys have a fucking shindig in the middle streets of Pittsburgh?
Everyone wants your president.
We all wear black and
gold. It means that today's the day we sign T. Higgins and Brandon Ayuk.
I wish.
We're a 1-2-3 combo, baby.
I'm so glad that you brought it up, Burke. So yesterday, Burke said...
You didn't even see what I put.
Of course I did. You sent a fucking tweet from a non-Adam Schefter, but a fake Adam Schefter account that said that Brandon Ayuk was on his way to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And he was so excited.
I was
about
excited
it.
For
he
about just,
the tweet was the tweet was in the chat for exactly 4 seconds.
I know because the only reason why you figured it out is because you read the chat where it said at like I don't know
yeah,
the real
the,
name.
The link, the
is
link
it Sports Talk Barry? That
no.
guy is so many.
Like, no, it
he
was
got banned
like,
so many times.
No, it was I think cringe. It was Berkey's burner account. It was like Najee is the best running back in the NFL. Like that is definitely coming straight from his burner.
Guy might be on to something.
Najee okay. Goat.
How excited were you when you were in it?
I was very excited.
Did you give out a fucking yell like you did when the Penguins scored yesterday? You fucking big, April 10th fucking big, hockey fan.
Big fucking win.
Are they going to make their way into the playoffs?
They're currently in the eighth slot.
Sid's doing everything he can.
This guy is putting them on his fucking back,
this
man.
This guy doesn't fucking watch hockey or think about hockey or even play NHL fucking 2024.
First of all,
until April 10th.
First of all, if you had any goddamn money, I would mop you for weeks on end at NHL.
My God.
Second of all, I looked like a week and a half ago when there were 10 games left for the season, and because I'm an idiot and don't know how scoring works for standings in hockey, I saw the Pens were 10 points out
with 10 games
to go.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, fuck, they're eliminated.
No.
And then I watched them go on this win streak, and just out of curiosity, I wanted to see how far out of it they still were, and I looked yesterday, and they're 1 point out. I'm like, yeah. Oh, because you get 2 points.
2 points for a win.
2 points for a win.
Right.
Right. The 2 points is very important.
Yes.
And we snuck right past, I don't know if it was Detroit. They realigned the conferences. Detroit used to be in the West. I think they're in the Metro now.
They're in the Midwest.
They are in the Midwest. They are confirmed in the Midwest. Dead center of the Midwest. But anyway, I think that
they're actually kind of in the East part of the Midwest.
Wow. It's close.
Yeah, the because Nebraska is also in the West, the right. Midwest.
Yeah.
They're on the west side of the Midwest.
Yeah, Nebraska would be on the west side of the Midwest. Yeah. You're acting like as if they're representing the borders.
Are you trying to tell us what a map looks like?
Cleveland would be the border.
They're actually in the Atlantic Division.
Okay, so either way, they moved to the East.
Yes.
Yeah, so we beat them yesterday in overtime, nudging them. I think they said that if the Penguins won, it was... Or the result of the game was going to result in a 47% swing for the Penguins one way or the other and a 36% swing for Detroit one way or the other.
To give you an idea, it was huge for you guys. So massive. You guys have 86 massive. Points right now and holding the last wild card spot.
That's right.
And Washington has 85. Detroit has 85.
Yes.
And Philadelphia has 85.
So three games left to play.
With three games left to play, honestly, anything can happen.
Well, here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to know. Philadelphia cannot get out of their own way. I haven't seen a single game by them all year. It doesn't matter. They are notoriously the Cleveland Browns of hockey. They just can't do it. So just scratch them off. Scratch them off the list then. They're dead.
They're out.
They're dead.
God, I can't wait to see who your next three games.
Caps are always a threat. They got Ovi. You know, it's a problem. Detroit has Ovi Patrick
is
Kane now.
67 years old.
Yeah, but he's still
so
fucking putting up numbers. Sid had a career year this year.
Yeah.
Like, not batting an eye. He said, boys, strap on. We don't miss the playoffs 2 years in a row, boys. Okay? Malkin's out there dragging ass. Can't get anything done. But Sid's calling for the puck from the fucking blue line. He's like, I'll be there. Just put it there. He was there. He was there, Brian. Right. He was there. Defense looks awful. Awful. Gave up 5 points in regulation.
Let's see.
At one point, there were 7 goals scored between the two teams with only like 25 shots on goal.
Well, yeah, it looks like that your fucking hockey time this year is going to be real short because you're playing Boston, Nashville, and the Islanders.
Okay.
And that's
a tough three. Sounds like an easy road.
An easy road.
Right to the cup, baby.
Yeah, who's good now?
Who's good in hockey now?
An April 10th hockey fan.
Are the Panthers good?
Yes.
The Panthers are a playoff team.
I heard that I've seen in like little Twitter things tier. That the Panthers are pretty decent.
They're a perennial playoff team the last like 5 seasons, I think. Yeah. They were really good maybe 2000, right before the pandemic, I think.
They lost to like the Lightning that year or something?
Lightning were excellent. They went back-to-back. Right around then.
How is Florida, like a very hot state, a hockey team?
Well, it's not.
They play indoors.
Yeah, I get that. But you know what I mean? Like most people in Florida don't really try to go play hockey. You know?
Yeah, but it's obviously.
Well, they don't recruit.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, think about like high school and the players don't come out of Florida. It's an NHL team. They're just built there. But like, if you think about how many players come out of Florida. It's probably not that many.
Why are they built there? You know, Florida's not really like a hockey. And I guess there's like...
What are we doing here?
It's a lot of environment stuff going on.
What are we doing? What are we trying to logic out
here? No, I just mean like it's not really like a cold state.
It's like asking why like a popsicle business would exist in Nevada.
Nah.
Like, I don't understand. Money. People like popsicles. People like hockey.
I'm saying people in Florida would be like, why is a popsicle business like...
bad parallel.
Why would it exist in like Alaska?
How about this? Because billionaires like money.
I don't understand.
So they bring because
why would you sell popsicles in Alaska when it's always cold? You have popsicles when it's warm.
Well...
He got
popsicles
you.
When I want something sweet.
Somebody called 911.
The parallel I was trying to draw is that it has nothing to do with the local, locale,
this
if you
true.
Will,
right.
when it comes to building the team.
Like, right. there's not
everybody's
many,
fucking Russian, man.
If there's not many, but if there's not many people in Florida that play hockey,
bro,
like,
right. there aren't many people in America that play hockey.
I think what Landon's trying to get to is the parallel of the Jamaican bobsledding team. And the irony.
Well,
of that.
Land is
but
also missing the fact.
You kind of need to be in a cold environment to have a bobsled team because.
Land is missing the fact that, like, half of Miami is fucking
Euros.
But
you don't need that for hockey.
And, like, Canadians and, like, not.
I'm in pain. I'm in pain just, like, watching this fucking.
this carousel?
This carousel of logic.
I just mean, like, if there's not many Florida people playing hockey, which is probably true, why would you put two different hockey teams in Florida, if people don't really watch it anyways?
Bro.
How do you know people don't watch
it? If they don't play or watch, like, if they don't play, they're not going to watch, really.
They're major cities. What are you talking about?
But it doesn't mean people are just going to go to a hockey game.
Yes, it does.
That's so logically inconsistent.
Do you think people play a lot of hockey in Vegas?
No.
The Knights are one of the most popular teams in the league.
Yeah,
it's true.
What are you talking?
Gambling.
Do you think a lot of people...
Gambling.
When it comes to sports played in America, do you think more people play soccer or hockey?
Soccer.
Yeah, not close.
Not close.
Not going to be close.
No.
There's hockey teams in 30 cities across America. I don't know how many MLS teams, but the reason I don't know is because no one fucking cares.
The crazy part is hockey is so much more popular than MLS here.
Way more.
It's insane.
What do you mean? It's American to its core.
They
drop the puck, and for no good goddamn reason, a guy punches another guy in the face.
But what was that?
It's literally 2 a.m. when a bar is closing.
You know why? Because we're so stupid. That's why.
What's going on with the hockey game where, like, they drop the puck and everyone just, like, fought each other?
That was the Rangers versus the Devils.
It was predetermined.
Yeah, it was because we have a rookie that's, like, I don't know. He's a goddamn animal. He's, like, 6'7". Fucking 275. I don't know.
Is he from Florida?
His name's Rempe.
And he's not from Florida.
he had a little dirty hit against the Devils the last time they played. So the second they dropped the puck, it was over. It was
how long that go on?
It was what's popping, man. Everybody fought.
I mean, to be fair,
it went on for at least 3 minutes, probably.
Fuck New Jersey. Shout out to New Jersey. What's going on, boys? Little GTL out there. All right. Let's it's your birthday, man. I don't want to.
Oh, here we go. We got it up.
I don't want to take you down anymore on this.
What do you mean?
On this hockey take.
Look how big this fucker is. He's fucking 6'7".
It's not really the hockey take. More like it doesn't make sense to me, but it doesn't mean it doesn't make sense to other people.
Oh, everybody's fighting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The whole team. Everybody.
When the goalies
it.
Get involved, you know you're watching a good time.
But in hockey, as soon as somebody hits the ground, it's like over, right?
They've like tampered with the fighting rules, or they've tampered them down like a lot, to the point where I don't know if it was last season or this season, they tried to all but eliminate fighting. Like,
yeah,
it got broken up really fast. The penalties were a lot more harsh. But I guess we're back.
We're so back.
I was talking to Uncle Dan about it the other day. He basically said, like, looks like we're back. Fighting is a thing again. They're kind of just like letting them go at it. It's all very weird. Like, as somebody who played baseball his entire life, that's always been an unspoken part of the game, right? Like, the players police themselves. You buzz a guy, you charge the mound, all this other stuff. I was charged once in my, I don't know, 30 years of playing. And great, my catcher intercepted. It was in a summer league, so it was like 19 to no age cap. And I was the youngest guy on the team. I was like 19. My catcher was like 32 and looking for fucking trouble.
What happened? You hit a guy? You hit a guy?
I think I lived on the inner half, and I think I just buzzed him. But it wasn't because of that. Like, some other shit had been going down. It was a rival team that I knew nothing about. Like, I was new to the team.
He was also 32 and looking for a problem.
Yeah, like I didn't know why they hated each other, but they all just fucking hated each other really badly. And I think something happened, maybe with like a hard takeout slide or something along those lines. So any excuse at this point. And I just like wrote a guy on the inner half of the plate, and he wasn't having it. Fucking back gets thrown. Thank God the bat got thrown down, because you know, not gonna be able to do much with a glove versus a wood bat. But yeah, him and my catcher, man, they just fucking went to town.
Is that Berkey right there?
I sidestepped my ass right to the foul line. Like, where is the largest collection of human beings? Oh, over here around third base? Sure, get them, boys.
Baseball's had some sick ones. Down goes Anderson.
Oh, there were a lot of sick ones. The Pedro just putting Don Zimmer into the fucking grass was pretty
Didn't
terrible.
Didn't SNL do a whole skit on that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, then the Nolan Ryan, Robin Ventura one, where Nolan was a fucking animal, man. He was like 46 when that happened. Just bludgeoned Robin Ventura. Just a bloody fucking mess. Man. But what I was getting at, what I was trying to get at is, in hockey, it seems very natural. Like, the fights seem like they are a part of the game, and they just occur. In baseball, it feels so fucking forced.
Yeah.
Like,
it's because there's fucking people have to run from the bullpen. Bro, that's like a half a mile away.
That's the most embarrassing part of it.
Like imagine running from the bullpen. I'm going to fight this guy.
By the time you get there, you're out of breath because you're throwing a swing.
Because here's the thing. The bullpen isn't just your relief pitchers. It's all of your starters that are off that day also. And so it's just like, you know, you're a starter who's like on day two of rest. You're there chilling, doing your fucking band work. You might not even be in full uniform, because if you throw a hoodie on over top, who's really going to know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, the call to arms comes where you're supposed to sprint your happy ass in with the fucking ice bag on your elbow, come in and throw a haymaker against their number four hitter. Like, it's not happening. You see it, too. You see how unenthused some of the bullpens are, where, like, you know, there's a couple guys that are always fucking looking for the heat, and they're just, like, full-blown sprint. And then there's, like, another seven dudes that are just like kind of like
behind,
happy jogging. Like, I guess I'm gonna let you boys this. Handle it before we get out there.
Are you guys done yet?
What should really happen is the two bullpens should meet in the middle and, you know, just have it out.
Yeah.
And they should decide if it's gonna be a war of words or a war of fists.
Right.
Sure.
You know, just like they meet somewhere in center field and they're just like, are we doing this?
Now
like,
kiss.
Like, seriously, it feels like a script out of Greece. Like, I love baseball to its core, but this is one of the most strange traditions that I would be happy to see go by the wayside. Like, it just doesn't make any fucking sense. The only thing that makes sense to me is that it was born out of the steroid era, where everybody was so goddamn on edge that the slightest little thing was going to set them off.
That wasn't going to tell you if they're on something or not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, somebody
they're
throws,
not juiced up gets
like,
one pitch.
Like, this never happened in, like, the 50s or 60s, did it?
I don't know.
I don't remember seeing, like, I mean, because there's, you know,
it had to have.
Yeah, but do you ever remember seeing footage of it?
No.
That's what I'm saying.
No.
I don't remember ever seeing like footage of like Mickey Mantle going out and throwing.
Like, if this didn't happen in the Jackie Robinson era where they were trying to integrate, how the fuck did we get here in the 80s and 90s? You know, it just has to be the juice. Like, guy throws a ball in the dirt and the hitter's just like, I'm fucking looking for a reason, man. Like, that's enough for me.
The juice was loose.
Do you remember Cal, I think it was Cal Farnsworth, a pitcher for the Cubs, where he got charged and he just spear tackled the fucking hitter and put him in the ground, just absolutely beat him to a pulp. I vaguely remember this, but it was like right around the foul line. He just met him halfway and just like boom, dumped his ass.
He's eating something. Maybe. She's eating paper.
No, she's just
it's her bed. She's fine.
She's a good girl.
Her bed.
Oh, that bed is fucked.
Look, this is what they do.
Yeah.
This bed was passed down from Rooney.
I don't know if she's in like choke on the paper or something.
Oh, the stuff.
She won't even get the paper off.
Okay, first it's the tag, and stop being a helicopter mom.
I mean, I don't. Okay, it's not my dog.
Pip's going to be just fine.
Well, hey, Pip.
Pip?
She had like this weird thing in her mouth a couple days ago. I was like, what is this? It was like plastic. Plastic, no good.
Eat it. She spits it right out. Come on, Pip. Pip, come.
All that training.
That training.
There it is.
It's on a lag.
You just got to wait her out. Yeah, she's
look at my butthole.
She's buffering. Oh, I got you out of the shot. I'm sorry.
We almost need to start an only pause for her.
Only pause. Yeah. What do you guys got lined up for the weekend? Anybody
UFC
playing any poker?
UFC 300, baby.
Oh.
What's the deal with this? I saw a lot of...
I'm super excited for
it's
this.
It's a lot of
There's
big
so
fights.
Many great fights.
I saw... Did I see something correct that somebody's giving away like a pile of money for some reason?
So normally the bonuses are $50,000.
Okay.
And a reporter went up and asked Dana, hey, listen, since this is UFC 300, can you do something special? And instead of the bonuses being $50,000, they're now $300,000.
Holy shit.
So these guys are like super incentivized to like take each other's heads off.
They gonna be fucking
someone's
brawling.
Gonna die.
Nobody's fucking tapping out. Nobody's getting knocked out.
Yeah, it's gonna be bad.
It's gonna be a fucking shit show.
What's the like main fight, the main card?
Alex Pajeda versus I can't think of his name right now. Jamal Hill?
Yeah.
Who you got?
Alex Pajeda.
How much are we laying on this?
Enough.
Guapos are sharp.
Actually, the bet that I really like is Charles Oliveira +185, but it's now +170.
Okay. If I've learned anything, I don't know shit about MMA or UFC, but if I've learned anything just throughout the years where we usually play while it's on and somebody always bets, taking the dogs is just so sharp. Like, I don't know that it's like, you know, super, super sharp, but it just seems as though lines are very rarely good.
That's the whole idea with UFC, right? It's hard to judge who's going to win or not.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I feel like...
It's like two men fucking in a ring just fucking throwing bows for their lives. They don't get paid shit unless they win over the long run, so they have to fucking kill the other man in the ring. They have to. If they don't kill him, they don't get paid. Family doesn't eat. Their trainers don't get paid. They're up Schitt's Creek. So, like, they just have to bust ass. Like,
what a business model, huh?
It's like the Roman Gladiators.
The UFC is, like, one of the only professional sports where a large part of the roster still has, like, regular 9-to-5s.
It's wild.
Just because, you know, they're fighting twice a year, maybe three times if they're lucky. Right. And if they're not in that top tier...
That really is crazy.
What does your headphones say?
It's Razer.
Oh, it says Razer.
Yeah, they're Razer headphones. Oh. It is kind of crazy when, like, you think about the amount of money UFC makes, I'm sure.
Yeah, they make a lot.
So it's like,
bro,
I don't know.
They're one of the biggest fucking entities out there.
I don't know. I feel like they've gotten paid a little bit more, but it's kind of like modern day slavery was. Because like these people are like literally fighting for fucking pennies. And like so many people get paid off of that paycheck that comes. They don't make that much money, and this is one of the biggest sports in the world. So it's kind of absurd to see such things.
Do you guys see an increase in traffic when UFC is going on in like the normal stakes, the normie stakes, if you will?
I mean, yeah, UFC is a major event. Like they have, I mean, not for the Apex, the little fights that they have down here.
But they don't.
But
you don't get to watch it in the poker room, right?
No, you can't watch
it. Usually with most events, if it's on the TV.
If it's a UFC, it's a pay-per-view event.
Yeah, right. You can't watch it in the poker room unless you're paying like $17,000 or something like that.
I mean, we sneak it sometimes.
That's not going to happen. I'm sure you can do that.
We'll watch on their phone, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, it's crazy the difference of like how much UFC makes as per like the fighters make.
Versus how much they pay their fighters.
Yeah, right? Hopefully we see some these 300K bonuses coming more often and shit like that. Just pay
that seems, like, honestly, that seems so small to me.
It is so small, dude. Like these, like I said, like
imagine you're just like the top fighter and you're not making like seven figures per fight.
I mean, so the top fighters do like, I want to say the top fighters probably do make something like stuff like that, like because of endorsements and stuff.
Well, I imagine
like
there's a big difference between like Connor at his peak or Chuck Liddell at his peak. What the fuck is a Chuck Liddell?
Nobody's nice entourage reference.
Well, what's nice about those days is they could actually promote the different companies that they could chill for, right? Like they could wear the shorts and they can have all the different banners and stuff. Well, UFC got rid of that. They'd sign deals with Reebok, and then after Reebok, now it's Venom. So. Yeah, I mean, it's just harder and harder for these guys to make money.
Like I never liked UFC. I never cared for people fighting. I went to a decent amount of fights at the Apex. I've watched fucking blood fly out of people's mouths, and I'm just like, Dude, you're not getting paid enough for this shit. Like, right. You're just not.
No, like, I mean, like, they're for sure sick.
They're
wired different.
So the Apex is like the lesser fights. Like, don't get me wrong, they have some good fights there, but it's like lesser. It's not going to be their pay-per-view stuff. So like, these people are really getting paid nothing.
I mean, that's the way boxing is too. Like, when you're coming up, like, you're getting paid dollars.
Like, but they're really getting paid nothing. Boxing's different because, like, whatever, you're boxing. Fucking MMA is another world, dude. These guys are killing each other.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I couldn't imagine doing it for the little bit of money that they're doing it for. And, like, just because, like, it takes a long time to get to any dollars.
Of course.
It takes
a
very, very, very long time.
And you have
to
stay healthy enough to do it.
And which is almost damn near impossible.
What about the birthday boy? What are you doing, Landon? What are you doing this weekend?
Going to Florida.
Okay.
Going back to Florida on Saturday. No, Saturday. Tomorrow.
You're leaving us?
Yeah, going to go to Florida.
We won't see him again until the series. He says he's going to Florida. We're actually shipping him to Russia, and he's going to do the Rocky IV training montage.
Oh, he's probably going to be a part of a stable.
Yeah, that's true. Get him in.
I'm being sent to a...
sending him to boarding school.
Yeah.
Poker boarding school.
Effectively. I'm going to go to Florida, and then going to go to Vancouver, play Scoop again, be with the Euros.
Right.
And then come back to Vegas.
Come back with some new phrases and new things to say.
More money, too.
A lot of scarves.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not really much of a scarf guy.
You're going to have to be a scarf guy.
You know, I don't want to be a scarf guy.
You got to pick a side,
look,
bro.
I don't want to be a scarf guy because they have the scarves, and I'm not going to pretend to be a scarf guy.
No, you don't
like,
need
the
to pretend.
The only person from the U.S. that wears a scarf is Joseph.
Mm.
Joseph is...
I like scarves.
He's had the scarf. Like,
Joseph fully committed to being a Sven.
He committed to the scarf.
I enjoy scarves a lot, honestly, while playing. Like,
you don't really, I don't see many scarves.
I used to wear them a lot.
East Coast is the thing.
I definitely will wear them, because like, it's just so comfortable to just like, put your mouth on something
and
just go like this. I love it.
Not to play in, but I've tried to wear scarves, you know, to stay warm and as a fashion. I don't get it. They're so long.
Yeah, honestly, it's...
They're so long. I just don't know what you're supposed to do. Like, if you do the one wrap, it's too goddamn long. Like, am I supposed to turn this into, like, the early goings of a tie?
Yeah, basically. You cut
no,
it,
then
you
it's cut too it, short, and it's
cut
like...
cut it in half, and then you just loop it through, and then...
I've tried that before. It looks too feminine.
For, like, whatever. For, like, poker, though, it's, like, nice to, like, put your face into it, like, when you're just sitting there.
Yeah.
Okay. And I hate doing it with my hands, because fucking poker sucks.
Sure. Big shout-out to Lee Jones. He said, straight from the Strat Chat Wednesday, bomb pot, flop, open-ended, it checks through, turn... Pair plus open ender, me 70 to 180, one reluctant caller, he's toast, river brick, me 400 please, his cards in the muck. Thank you. You're very welcome. Thank you for sharing and appreciate the super chat. Yeah, I guess in line with, actually, it would have been interesting to get Joseph's take on this because this directly affects him.
On scarves?
Well, yeah, on scarves.
Today we have Mike Joseph on scarves.
How has the scarf affected your playing career?
Bottom line.
Since we're talking about war and men fighting one another, about 10 days ago, maybe 12 days ago, I think we first caught wind of this. It was while we were either preparing to go on the cruise or we were there. a Russian affiliate of GG Poker called Poker OK put out a bunch of statements over a very short period of time where they had effectively made a significant policy change where the notion was going to be that stables were too big of a net negative for the ecosystem. And they were basically, and I'm all but quoting, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but I'm paraphrasing what Ivan, the
CEO.
The CEO was saying, and he basically said, we are at war with stables. So the idea behind this is that he's basically saying that these stables are breaking a lot of TOCs, or terms and conditions, terms of service, whatever, in that they're soft playing, they're ghosting, they are... laundering money between one another. They're doing all of these nefarious things, which to some degree may be true, to other degree, probably not. It's kind of one of those, does one bad apple spoil a bunch type of notions. But this is also very on par with the way GG has approached their policy towards professionals for the last handful of years. And the vast majority, from what we can tell from the more public side of things on GG, which would be more of the Michael Kim head of all operations overseeing all of these skins, the messaging that he's basically put out is that we value recreational play. We want to grow the recreational pool, and we don't really care about professionals. It seems as though they've had a pretty strict policy of not really caring all that much about making it a habitable environment for the professionals. So whether that's good or bad, we can debate that later, but that's just kind of the impetus behind this. Now, whenever we start to talk about the direction that Poker OK is moving, as far as coming after stables in particular, it seems as though there are a lot of underlying, for lack of a better word, scandals or cheating accusations that are being floated throughout online poker as a whole that are plaguing online poker. There are a lot of mechanics through which people aren't getting fair games, right? And there aren't very obvious solutions. So it appears as though they're trying to rectify a lot of wrongs by just strictly attacking stables. And, you know, they basically blamed a lot of, they call them poker schools. Now, a lot of this is maybe lost in translation. And having spoken to Tyler, who's the one who found the bot ring on ACR, he was kind of saying the same thing. Like, what we call coaching for profit, a lot of the European nations refer to as poker school. But it's all one and the same. So the general mechanics are these poker stables are a big part of the online MTT ecosystem. And what's happening is some level of profit share in exchange for, assuming that the stable's operating on the up and up, education, right? Now, there are bad actors within the stable space where you have fleets of people who are playing the early stages, and then they're tapping in for the more experienced players who are playing the middle stages, who are then getting tapped out for closers. And this is more
sophisticated form of ghosting.
Yes. This is more of what Ali was doing back whenever he was still able to be in action. it seems as though that was the structure he was operating on. If you were new to the stable, you would play the early levels. He had his ringers who would play the middle stage, and then he and his partner, Chris Fitz, would often close, allegedly, with the use of RTA. So I think the big thing from this was the aggressive nature at which it went public. So the messaging didn't really mince any words. It was basically like, fuck bros, we don't care. Get your money off our site. We don't need you. We don't even care if poker is beatable. We are here as a casino, effectively, that's offering this fair game. And the easiest way to keep it fair is to keep the money recreational and take away the ability for anybody to easily collude or card share, ghost, whatever the case may be. This led to PADS putting out a very, very lengthy statement. I think this was about a week ago, April 5th. So yeah, exactly a week ago. He said, this is my first post back on Twitter this year, and it's an important topic I know a little bit about. The thread about poker stables and funds, I will engage respectfully in debate and replies and quotes. So I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the gist of it was him summarizing what Poker OK did, which deciding to stop all stables, making conditions difficult. So they couldn't ban the players. This is important to outline. They couldn't outright ban the players because they weren't really breaking any terms of service. So what they did is they reduced their withdrawal limit down to $250, and then they took away peer-to-peer transfers.
Yeah, I think what they did was they the only way they could withdraw was through the debit card,
right,
which had a $250 limit on it.
Correct.
So
and then to my knowledge, I'm not sure if they took away peer-to-peer on the site as a whole or if it was just between people that they suspected were in stables. But they shadow banned effectively like 50 plus accounts in the early goings of this, which led to PADS. What?
I did the math of if you won $1 million and had to withdraw 250 every day, it would take you 11 years. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's a tough. Lot. That's a lot.
You'll get it eventually.
And I don't think people understand, but it's important to also understand that if you try to skirt these rules and say get your money off faster by chip dumping to somebody who does have higher withdrawal limits, you're playing right into the trap that they're setting for you.
That's bait.
Right, that's bait. That will be a breach of terms of service. Mm-hmm. That will get your account banned. That will get the funds seized. And it will also implicate the person that you're dumping the money to.
You get fucked and your friend.
Correct. And this happens all the time on all sites. American, not American, legalized, not legalized, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, operators are really strict when it comes to chip dumping because it's one of the easiest ways to find cheaters. Pads then goes on after outlining basically what PokerOK is doing, that it's important to understand that this comes from 100 plus posts over a 24-hour period replying to people in a forum where emotions were high, rather than it being an official GG statement, but it was coming from somebody at the highest level of PokerOK. Then he goes on to basically talk about the good and the bad of stables. And to be fair, there probably isn't a better authority in our space right now than Pads to speak on this. He's been a part of BitB for the better part of a decade. I think he's been on both sides of it, where at one point he may have been backed, but for sure he's been on the backing side for quite some period of time. And he's able to illuminate a lot of how important these stables are to the ecosystem. I've seen him give this example many times, but in the past, he had talked about how when he had saw that the Stars daily $100 buy-in, I can't remember what the guarantee was at one point, it might have been like 50K or something like that, had been reduced to like 40K, he suggested that his stable didn't play it. And very quickly, over the matter of months, by stables retracting, the guarantee fell all the way to like 5K or 10K, something very significant to where the event itself became unplayable. This does greatly impact the way that the recreationals are deciding to utilize their funds on the site, and you know what the prize pools will look like, what the guarantees will look like. Stables do seem to have a lot of influence in shaping this. Also, they provide a ton of liquidity to the not just the professionals playing, but also to the ecosystem as a whole. Think of a player who is six figures in makeup and gets dropped. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a ton of liquidity that got passed around the ecosystem that isn't getting recouped by the person who invested. So it is, I've spoken about this in the past, it is a method of redistributing wealth from the top down, right? A lot of the guys who are the head of stables, the ones that are doing all the investing, they're the guys that have made it. They're that top 1 to 10% of poker players who've gotten wealthy independently by their play and don't have stakes big enough to play any longer, whatever. And that money's either under lock and key or there are methods to reinvest, stables being one of them. And oftentimes they enter a break-even endeavor or they enter a small losing endeavor, and a lot of rake is churned and a lot of money is put back into the small stakes, mid stakes ecosystem that otherwise was evaporated. So all of those points are very valid. And I think he does a good job of demonstrating the counters as well. He said, I'm also very aware that some stables act poorly. I'll be playing in a 10K tournament against player X and realize that player Y has 90% of him. I hate this. I love that GG has the staking feature. It's something I told Stars to do 10 years ago. And I think anybody in high stakes who plays and stakes should be forced to buy action within the client. I think that that's very reasonable. And we could talk about that as a possible solution as this whole thing wraps. I think the point that he makes where the reason this isn't that crucial at low to mid stakes is because the player pool is enormous. But that almost counterpoints his previous statement of how important stables are. If the low to mid stakes are that robust with players, then stables aren't that important to prop up the ecosystem, right? It's only going to be true at the higher buy-ins. And I don't know that sites give a shit, right? Like, I don't know if they care if they get a 1K off or even a 109, right? The rake is basically, it reduces the higher up you go, or it's flat. It's one or the other, right? Like, just depends on the rake structure. But there aren't very many sites, if any, that rake more for a 10K than they would for a $10 buy-in.
What's like the average buy-in for these stables?
I imagine it varies. I imagine that they have, I don't want to say compartments, but I imagine they have, like, you know, their low stake team, their mid stake team,
their high stake. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine that stables do take, like, they are a large part of even the micros. Not micros, but say, like, mid-stakes. And that's, like, and also, like, you want pros on your site because they bring more traffic of others. Like, they just, like...
That's only true if you need game starters. That's much more true in cash.
But, like, even, like, promotions, just, like, if people talk about stuff, like, the more people talk about stuff, the more pros that are, like, on the site, I feel like it just drives action, like, drives...
It makes me think of those Full Tilt commercials where everybody's walking in slow motion and you're seeing like all the pros and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah, I understand where you're going with it. I'm just not so sure I agree. I maybe that was true 20 years ago when playing with pros was like a sought after thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's really the experience of recreationals now. I think they would all be very happy to play in a home game with their buddies.
But if Daniel Negreanu said, "Hey, I'm going to play at the South Point this weekend," like you don't think that would just drive a lot of people to want to?
I just think that's apples and oranges.
So maybe I'm not talking about Daniel Negreanu. Like I'm talking about like the everyday people that play fuck the bird at the 400 at Venetian,
right?
Like people like that. Like let's say
like
1100s, like shit like that.
So like you're saying that if the Massey brothers don't show up, the numbers are going to go down.
Not saying that if the Massey brothers don't show up, but if every Massey brother like type person doesn't like I don't know, I think they drive accident in some way.
Friends, they talk to their poker buddies and say, hey, this there's a 400 at the Win, we should all go play it, or it's going to be good, you should play it.
Argument takes the eye off the ball a little bit because you're comparing them to single events live that don't allow for any level of scale in the moment, right?
I didn't mean to be comparing it to live, but yeah.
Right, but like online, it's a full schedule, right? So like they're just going to have a schedule of events every day, and the people who play are going to play anywhere from like one to dozens of events. So I don't necessarily think that they need to be... The only thing they need to get like lubrication for is to get on the site. Once they're on the site...
And I think that's what...
You think people show up because they're like, oh, hey, GG has this like great 50k guarantee on Saturdays that like half the field is pros.
Well, I think they'll need to be said the last part, like the latter doesn't need to be said half the field is pros.
I think
that like word of mouth of tournaments of like gets recreationals involved. And I think that comes from like pros like being at a table. So let's just say being at a table or whatever. And
how much word of mouth have you heard regarding online poker in the last 5 years?
Besides the dying?
I mean, a decent amount.
Yeah, a decent amount.
Yeah, like people ask where to play tournaments, where to play this, where to play that. And it's just like word of mouth to get people onto the site.
Man, I don't know. I don't think that's true.
Right.
I mean, maybe at like a very, 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 very small scale.
Yeah, I don't play enough live to really chime in, but the times that I have played live, I don't hear many people talking about
it. Maybe
online.
I just see it more because like, people just talk to me about
it. Hey, what
are
you guys doing on Saturday? Like, Want to hop in that $10 bird on WSOP
I'm not getting exact. I'm just talking about like players playing on like on these sites, like each site significantly. Like, I mean, like say for like global post.
The other thing is like the other. I get what you're trying to say. It's just I feel like it's apples and oranges. You have to remember too, in Europe, it's not like these guys are all playing live most of the time and then going to online.
Yeah, that's true.
Like they don't even have a live option. Where are they hearing the word of mouth?
Yeah, that's a good point.
If this were true, then I think like poker forums would probably be more favorable to these sites and you'd see a lot more advertising taking place there. But forums are largely ghost towns. Everything takes place in private discords. The scale has become so much more localized than it ever has been in the past, right? Like if you look back in the history of online poker pre-Black Friday, everything was at a very global level, right? Whenever you're talking about Full Tilt and Stars, they were not just promoting to the masses, but they were promoting to the world. It was, you know, let me demonstrate to you how cool it is to play poker in your underwear and make money. And that was just the general theme, right? Like, that's our theme. Every Sunday, there's going to be a new 100,000-aire, and we're just going to run with it, right? And we're basically giving you all an opportunity. And then, you know, obviously the ability to onboard people back then was super simple. There wasn't much KYC. Getting money on was very easy.
peer-to-peer.
Yeah, the cost per acquisition was very, very, very low, and they were able to offer a lot of in return, right? You might get like $1,000 sign up bonus, and the person who brought you also might get like 10% of your rake back for life. Like a lot of incentive driven stuff. It's a lot harder to acquire now. You know, that's why what GG did in the last 5 or 6 years is so remarkable. Mm-hmm. They overthrew Stars in no time.
Yeah.
How did they do that?
They were an app.
Well, yeah, they were using agents. So
right.
They were
the first agent-based app to convert into a rest of world client. But largely they have, as much as I hate to say it, Bryn to thank for this. Like I mean, to that point, like, you know, Conrad could have a stronger case of like word of mouth. Like this guy just recruited the world to get them off and running, but they did it from the highest stakes down, right? So what they did is they ran a bunch of high stakes stuff where Bryn was getting people on, maybe cutting them deals or giving them rake back or whatever the case may be. And they were able to get buy-in levels off that were pretty foreign to online, like regular
25Ks, right?
Well, eventually, but it started at like 5Ks, but they would get like daily 5Ks off.
And what that did was made people talk about it.
Right.
Like forums, fucking
matter. Because that didn't exist. Like you couldn't play a 5K on Stars or Party at that point.
Yeah.
Unless maybe, it was like a special maybe
Scoop.
Event.
Like, yeah. like maybe right. Scoop and WCoop.
Yeah,
but
you
like,
get one or two events.
These were fucking five a day.
Yeah.
Like they wanted to become the site that had high stakes action.
Well, because they didn't, I don't think that they projected they were going to become a major client. They just knew that Asia was their target audience. And so they have like endless amounts of Asian recs that are looking to fire really big because they're rich and they have a lot of interest in the poker. And now Bryn's job is to basically bring people in and collect free EV who are going to have a pleasant experience on the site. And that's exactly what happened. So a bunch of pros showed up, varying in skill, and they all had varying results. And you know, it started to grow. And now word of mouth started to trickle down because this is a very soft site where if you have the ability to get an agent and the liquidity to get on there,
this was
you could play. It's like 2018.
So like, this was okay. Like the COVID, right?
Like I was like
right
2018. Yeah. It was right before I moved into my new house.
Okay.
So like 2018-ish, 2017-ish maybe. Right as like high rollers really started to take off. You know, right as the Super High Roller Bowl 2 and 3 were happening, and maybe the first Triton events were right around this time as well.
Okay.
Obviously, lead now into the pandemic, and it's a huge fucking deal. GG's like a full-blown client now, and they have the entire pandemic to draw from.
Yeah.
So what do? They partner with WSOP.
Online was definitely... That was a really good time for online.
Yes, it was.
Looking back, maybe it was just a really good time for online cheaters.
Mm. That too. I got into poker like right before pandemic stuff, and then I could tell a difference in the games of just online sites.
Right.
When people couldn't go to casinos to go play.
Right, of course. But yeah, the irony of all this is more. Yeah, the irony of all of this is that in order for GG to be what GG is now, they absolutely relied upon stables.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you call it like the agent client relationship or you look at it as a more traditional coaching for profit type of place or whatever, the hierarchy was there, right? Like all the shit Bryn was accused of was the shit that the leader of a stable would be accused of.
Right.
And it's funny to see it kind of come full circle now where, and my timeline could be a little bit off. It may have been like 2018, 2019 that they advanced to becoming a client. And yeah. It might've been a little bit earlier that it was an app.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, like I remember I first started getting into apps like 2016. The first one was Poker Master. And basically these apps just became a pathway for a very select group of Americans to have access to recreational Asian money without having to go to Macau.
Yep.
But you very quickly realized you were being cheated. Okay. You very quickly understood that like things are not as they appear. And they died. They just all died off like relatively
Detox
fast.
Had like that Poker Master era for a time.
Poker Masters, Poker Fishes, yeah.
Where Poker Master was really good, and then out of nowhere, it was like, how do I keep losing all ins with hands that have equity?
Right.
Oh, card share again, yeah.
Right.
Got it.
Right. So yeah, there's you know, slippery slope with stables. There's some necessity to them, maybe. There's some downside to them. Sharing hands on other players, data mining effectively. Sharing hands on the population, again, a different form of data mining. And then the bigger ones that are more egregious is ghosting, card sharing, and deep runs, allowing, you know, stable heads to take over, things of that nature.
There's nothing you can do to prevent that type of stuff, like, right? Like, this doesn't
Well, they're trying
that.
To.
No, yeah, but that this doesn't prevent that. Like, of course, if somebody gets deep and, like, they were in a stable and, like, this is what they did, they're going to continue doing
it. Well, now they're going to have to wait 11 years if they win $1 million.
That's true.
That's the possible penalty, right?
Yes.
If they get caught, yeah.
Like, they win 200K, that still takes
a long time.
3 years.
Yeah, and it makes it makes it very difficult without the peer-to-peer transferring.
Well, they are allowed to play. Hold on. They are allowed to play, and it will be changed from... because they're getting back to the client, so they're not going to have the $250 stipulation, correct?
Okay, so let's fast forward now to what's happened in the last week.
Okay.
Fedor responded. He said, "My first dive into this, the phrasing and actions look concerning. It's quite generalizing against staking and stables in general. The vast majority of criminal organizations in the poker environment are sort of stables, but clearly not all stables are bad actors."
Yeah, so like, I think Poker Code is relatively stable based.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I mean, he needs to be pretty mindful here. Like, you know, let's not cut off our nose to spite our face here. But it's also a well put together statement because it's just correct.
Mm-hmm.
There is always going to be some form of backing in this game. Otherwise, the game dies. Like, unfortunately, until poker becomes a true sport where there are just owners that are funding everything, which even then would still be some version of backing, I guess. But until, like, you effectively remove buy-ins from events, this is going to occur in some sort of regard. So now let's follow up. I believe this one was put out 3 or 4 days later, so about 4 days ago. Pads follows up and he says, massive developments this morning. PokerOK posted a joint statement from themselves and GG. Very strong post with restrictions blocking confiscation of stables who continue to advertise. Staking only prohibited, or I think he misspoke.
Continue to advertise, like, on Facebook chats and shit?
Yeah. Basically, they are banning, like, recruitment. But he said staking only prohibited in the client, but I think he meant only permitted in the client.
Yes.
So the statement from GG and PokerOK is... the activity of stables that systematically violate the rules of the platform, including team play, soft play, ghosting, collusion, bum hunting, multi-accounting, collective collection of statistics, notes, and mining, must be stopped. Otherwise, according to the Agreement on Ecology and Safety updated on April 8th, bankrolls, players, stables will be confiscated. That was a very confusing sentence. But basically, what it's saying is they...
it was translated from...
I imagine so. So what it's effectively saying is that if you are a part of a stable past April 8th, you'll either be shadow banned or your otherwise money and bankrolls will be confiscated.
Shadow banned is such a good term. Like, you're getting sent to the shadow realm.
I wonder, like, what the qualifications would be labeled as part of a stable.
Well, I assume it would begin with them having money records transfers. Of peer-to-peer transfers.
Yeah.
So them combing through all of that and then seeing, like, what sort of business you two are doing thereafter. It goes on to say, we accept as true that poker is an individual game, and such activities of stables imply the promotion of an attitude towards poker as a collective game, which is contrary to the entire positioning of the GG Poker Network. Backing of players in tournaments should only take place using the functionality of the PokerOK client on the GG Poker Network. In order to expand the functionality of backing, in the next 2 months, we will implement a function that allows you to see a player's backers. Stables should not publicly advertise player backing. Backing should be a private arrangement and not a marketing tool to attract more players to stables. Any stable that violates these rules is prohibited from doing business on PokerOK and GG Poker Network, as well as players associated with them, who may be subject to these restrictions, blocking, or confiscation of funds. So the resolution then is they're going to allow backing to continue and effectively allow stables to continue, but everything has to be fully transparent.
I don't hate this.
I think this is a very reasonable solution.
Yeah, actually. I don't hate this at all. If you woke up and you wanted to go on war against the stables, like, I think this is a very, very, very reasonable solution.
I tend to agree, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And that's a weird stance because I'm having a lot of conversations behind the scenes, and it does feel like it's a lot more nefarious coming from Poker OK than what is maybe being publicly stated in these sentences.
And what do you mean by that?
There have been a lot of, albeit they're translated posts, but a lot of posts from the CEO of Poker OK, or whatever that Ivan guy represents.
Okay.
Where he's using language that is clearly targeting stables, professionals,
winning players
and the sort, mm-hmm. basically saying like, get out.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there's a follow-up post that was put in the Gypsy team forum yesterday. Now my understanding is that this is Tyler posting, that this is Ivan, the CEO posting.
Is this it right here, Matt?
Yep. But again, I can't be clear. If you want to zoom in a little bit on the text, I'll give you a rundown of what it says.
I know what the Jigsaw meme said.
So he's responding to Tyler, who, again, for references, who found the bot ring at ACR. He said, to Tyler, whom I'm very grateful for the fight against bots, also wrote publicly that I personally want there to be independent body to catch bots. Since this is evil, I think he's basically saying, again, this is loosely translated, but I think he's saying Tyler said that these statements against the professionals are evil. He said, I even gave him some money for this startup. He wrote this publicly on his channel. This is not some sort of bribe. We are on the same side, and I have an open dialogue with him, although we have completely different points of views on stables. This does not prevent us from communicating and discussing. Lorem writes in his public Telegram channel that we are unable to do anything for the stables, but okay, the game has begun. I will do everything to make sure you are gone for now, no matter what the cost. Stables are not welcome here. Take the money and get out. For you, this is currently 30 to 50% of profit and success in working in other rooms. You'll continue to play with limits of $2,500 a month. We can change it to $1,000 and even less. Withdraw your money and leave. I warn you while you still can. All the regs who were accidentally hit, those who left stables, you have our ambassadors and public figures that will help you get back into the swing without the stable, without any funds or dragging under anyone. You will see everything for yourself, but if you deceive us, there will be consequences. And finding new stables, dropping members will not be a problem. You will see everything in capital letters. The game has begun.
Okay.
Kind of aggressive. Right.
That was aggressive.
How drunk was he when he wrote this?
I don't think at all.
I just imagine it's like this Russian guy just sitting there fucking a bottle of vodka, just shooting him back all night.
I mean, maybe, but I do think that it's difficult for me. I always get reminded how happy I am that I don't have a dog in this fight when it comes to online poker, but it also saddens me because even though I went the way of live very, very, very early in my career, I absolutely recognize that without online, I don't know that I would be here today. Right. For a myriad of reasons. Mm-hmm. Not just that it gave me a cheap alternative whenever I was headed towards broke and I could rebuild there.
Or not, like as a training ground.
Yeah, not just that I was able to put in a ton of hands and train. Not even that for, if nothing else, it really taught me what variance was about, right? Because when you just start to play things at 10x the volume that you can do live, you start to see shit and you start to have to process it and really come to grips with the fact that this is what variance looks like, right? Mm-hmm. But all of that aside, it's the backbone for what got the industry to where it is now. So much money was infused in the community through online sites. Obviously, most of it was pre-Black Friday, but even post-Black Friday in the regulated realm of Nevada, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Michigan, a few other states that are coming into the fold here in the United States, in the gray realm of ACR's operations and the semi-regulated realm of rest of world, like there's still a lot of money that is being infused into the community via online, and it segregates talent really well. So it keeps live very much like under lock and key, where it's still just very beatable for large numbers. It becomes a lot less beatable when everybody who, you know, looks like Ponikovs is just grinding a Venetian 400 deep stack. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. That's why I guess I was pushing back so hard against what Conrad was saying.
It made me go to the win
about the the idea of word of mouth. It's like, well, if the word of mouth that's getting passed around is, hey, live is softer than online, stop wasting your time here, and you just start to pull everybody out who's a big winner online, and they just start showing up at like low to mid stake buy-ins live. Like, that's the big thing, right? A $400 buy-in online is high stakes. A $400 buy-in live is a fucking daily. And that can't be overlooked, because if you get the same people who are capable of winning in a $400 buy-in online now playing $400 deep stack events or what have you, it dies
smash.
Quick.
Yeah, they're going to smash.
Yeah, like the ROIs are going to be very, very large. The reason they don't do it is because it's not worth their time.
Right.
Their hourlies are very low. But their ROIs might be like 200%.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's why that's the meme of Becker, is that, sure, he's crushing dailies. His ROI and those things are sick. He actually might have like a 200, 250% ROI. But his hourly sucks because they're tiny. They're mm-hmm. small buy-ins. They're high rake.
You forget that sometimes you're in for 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah. So you end up making like $15 an hour over the long haul just to hold up a bunch of trophies. And even though your ROI might be 300% when all that's said and done, it's not worth the exchange, because you can't do this in mass. You can't do this. You can't make.
You can't 8-table the daily.
Exactly. Correct. If you could 8-table it, now all of a sudden you're making $120 an hour, and that's fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that seems well worth it, but you can't. So I think there is a part of me that, even though I'm so out of this world, I always stay as close to tapped in as I possibly can, because I think it's necessary, especially as we move along in a technological way. Like, people are more and more online now than they've ever been. There always needs to be some sort of healthy balance between the online world and live. And I just struggle so much to see how we overcome these hurdles that are taking place online. So I guess, like, now that we kind of understand, okay, the solution was that backing will still occur, but it has to occur within the client. That actually seems on the up and up, right? Peer-to-peer transfers are gone, which personally I would find to be terrible and an inconvenience, but I think it's mandatory. I think it's crazy, crazy that sites operate with peer-to-peer transfers.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, so many negative downsides to allowing peer-to-peer. I mean, there's a whole market for ACR dollars. Like, let's call it what it is. That's laundering.
Yeah, it's washing money.
Right?
Sure.
Like, you're 100%. Like, if I go to a OTC chat and say, like, have ACR dollars, want crypto -1, what am I doing here? You know, like, this is very close to...
You're exchanging is what you're doing.
Yeah, but, like, not on the up and up, really.
Mm.
You know, you're creating this like separate gray black market type affair. Anyway,
gray market.
I think getting rid of peer to peer is a very sharp move. I think having staking within the client is a very sharp move. I think that exposing the people who are buying those stakes, also very sharp move. I think this is very good for the players too, because now you're not necessarily quite as emboldened to individual people, right? Like, you're creating a free market where they can, other people can buy if they would choose, but your backers will be there in droves to sweep the floor.
They kind of have just like first right of refusal.
Right.
Like, hey, I'm about to post this on GG.
Yeah. Refresh, and it's kind of good for backers too, because it sets the floor for what markup is supposed to be. Like, we start to understand a lot more how buyers and sellers are operating. Everything about this seems to be like reasonably good. Now, what's happening underneath the surface in this messaging of like a war on stables and pros and everything else, this is dicey, man. This is a big fucking gamble. And from a business perspective, if I step out of the player hat for a moment and forget that I'm speaking on behalf of the community and the players and the people who we care about at the podcast, but I put on my business cap and say, like, is this going to make me more money as the CEO of GG? Is this going to make me long-term richer?
Doesn't feel like it, right?
I think it might.
Really?
I think it's successful.
That was my question, too, is, like, if you're just chopping off chunks of stables, like, obviously more rake is more money, right? Like, how does this How does this make you more money by getting rid of players?
Yeah.
Because you have so many big marketing ploys that draw in recreationals.
But what happens, right? So like, okay, so you get rid of all the winners, all the stables, all the winning players, right? And now all the break-even players now become winners in the game. Then what do? You get rid of them?
No, and you break them to death.
But what do you mean? Like, aren't they winning players? You get rid of the winning players.
You're thinking of it too black and white. You're thinking of it.
So they get rid of all the, like, it's one layer, get rid of all them, and then just stop getting rid of the winners and the stables. And
you're thinking of it very black and white, is like, if you were winning X big blinds per 100 and X equals a small number, like 2 or 3 or whatever, the GG is like on guard and attacking you. And it's not. It's more nuanced than that. Like, what they're doing is they're eliminating outliers. They're taking the biggest winners out of the pool, and they're effectively like banishing them.
Right. And it's the people that are sucking all the.
Correct. What the stables allow for is a big concentration of that. Mm-hmm. So by eliminating stables, they eliminate large concentrations of winners.
A lot of very good players are backed.
Correct.
Because they need to be. They know how variance works. So
instead of. So they don't care about the player.
EV just gets pushed around the pool instead of one or two big players taking most of it.
Just floats on the top and they skim it every single day through the
lake. That's the new game.
I still don't see how the bottom line increases here, though, by getting rid of the winning players. Like, how does this get more traffic? It keeps the
losing players in action longer, which generates more rake.
Correct. It's not about acquisition. It's about retention.
Like, the best thing for a site is for everyone to have a 0% win rate.
Correct.
You just lose the rake slowly.
Yeah, you just rake them to death.
But with tournaments, there's variance, right?
Yeah, so the more you can level the playing field, the better it is for the client.
Yeah.
It's almost like if the site just had like GTO bots cheating against each other the entire time and everyone just keeps firing money.
Yeah.
That's what's best for them.
Yeah.
Well, sure, if it were a rake-free environment. Because they would be winning through the bots.
I just mean like if there was no like losing players and everyone was super like elite, paying rake and everyone was winning 0 against each other.
Yeah, right. Sure.
But yeah, I guess the new game is be as good as you can without winning too much to get scalped off the site.
I mean, that's always been the game in some regards, at least live. But I don't think that, no, I don't think that works.
You bet a hand.
As somebody who's tried to navigate the high stakes private realm a lot, there are a lot of different approaches to this, and I've tested a lot of them. And I can tell you with certainty, I can tell you that taking a losing strategy up front in order to secure future seats is not the way to go. Right? Curbing your win rate in order to retain a seat that's not guaranteed to you to begin with, bad idea. So the idea that like, oh, I'll play online, but I'll reduce my win rate by 25% so that I don't get swept up in the ban, not the right approach, I don't think. I think it's just going to have to be there will be player-friendly sites and there will be non-player friendly sites, and it'll just be a war to see which model functions better.
Well, by player friendly you mean
professional player. Yeah,
reg friendly.
Yes.
Is it a known thing that stables soft play and like do all these things that they're being accused of? It seems awfully heavy-handed to just assume that if you are in a stable then you are doing these things.
I mean, if you're not assuming it, then you're not protecting yourself.
Yeah, it's been a big problem. There's a lot of accusations floating around. A lot of the Brazil stables get dragged through the mud. I think there's a professional on Stars. I can't remember who it is, but he's like a known ghoster or stable operator where he basically it's widely speculated that he does a lot of nefarious things, and he continues to be a Stars ambassador. To the degree where like I've seen other ambassadors speak on it and they just basically say like, you know, don't judge us based off of
right. It just seems kind of shitty for somebody who's in a stable and everything is on the up and up, because now it's like frowned upon. If I were to say, hey, I'm in a stable, it's just assumed that I'm doing these things.
Well, there's no like admitting of anything, right? They're basing it off of their back end data. They're not like sending out a questionnaire to their player pools and saying like, are you backed? Check yes or no. Right. it's more so that they are just looking at like peer-to-peer transfers. They're looking at whatever interactions. I don't know to the degree at which GG is able to monitor shit. Maybe they are able to monitor your screen. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, like, moving forward, what they're trying to do is eliminate their platform as a marketing ploy for Stables to increase the volume of students, right? Because from the two perspectives, for backers, the perfect world would be that everybody who's a non-recreational is in a stable and an effective draft takes place. And, you know, you hope to draft the best team. And through that team, you're all going to make money off of the recreational player pool, as well the other stables, right? So, like, you just need to outperform the other stables as a top tier guy. As an individual in the stable, it's dog eat dog, right? Because you don't benefit off the stable doing well. You only benefit off of you yourself doing well. So it's a weird conflicting incentives, I guess, between the person doing the backing and the people being backed, which maybe that gets curbed in some, like, I'm not privy to what goes on in the good actor, bad actor stables. Maybe in the bad actor stables, they all share profits and say, like, look,
so then they are,
if I do better, you all do better. Yeah, so, like, why don't you guys start card sharing and doing all the shit that's necessary to make this fucking thing run?
Yeah.
You know, instead of, like, saying, I'll give you 50% of your profits, maybe they say, like, I'll give you a 5% stake in the stable and then a little bit of profit share on your own winnings, right? I mean, that seems like a pretty good way of encouraging people. But it also seems like a very slippery slope where now everybody's pretty heavily incentivized to cheat. With all that being said, from the site's perspective, they want zero stables, in spite of the fact that they do a great job, as Pad said, infusing liquidity into the pool and all this other stuff. They want it to be as challenging as humanly possible for pros to win. And if that means pros get taken out of action because they can't afford to buy in anymore, great. Like, truly, the sites don't care. You know, if, like, Patrick Leonard goes broke tomorrow and can't play online anymore, the sites are not going to be upset about that.
Right.
Right? He's sucking out EV. So, you know, it is this thing where the professional and the operator are kind of at odds. And I imagine this happens in cash as well, just maybe to a lesser degree, especially because the pools are so much smaller and it would really be difficult to avoid collusion or, you know, kind of doing anything unethical. But I'm not really sure. Again, like, I'm not in those streets. so I'm certainly not pretending to be an authority on all this. But I guess my last point before we kind of discuss the efficacy of all this is, I don't know that this model is going to win for GG. But again, like, if I just remove myself as the player and I look at this from a business perspective, I kind of think it's sharp. I kind of think it's sharp to create. And again, I'm not trying to say this as it's good. I don't think it's good for poker.
Right. You're just saying it's a shrewd business move. That's
I think it's pretty shrewd to just, like, over rake a pool that doesn't care that they're paying too much. And that's going to be the recreationals. We see it all the time at the entry level tournaments, right? Mm-hmm. How many 100 plus 25 plus a $15 dealer add-on have we seen?
Yeah.
Doesn't this happen during, like, WSOP, and that's kind of where the pushback is, where, like, rake is really high?
Rake's not that high though.
Well, people claim it's that
it's high, but, like,
it could be higher for a tour.
I think WSOP does a pretty good job with their rake. I've had, like, one or two complaints over the last handful of years, and it only really happens at the smallest buy-in level.
It's the smallest buy-in, right.
Yeah. Even that, they corrected. Like, it was 21. They reduced it to 18. Mm-hmm. 18's a fucking lot, but...
Now, if you look at, like, if you go to, you know, the smallest of dailies around town,
right,
and you're looking at $60 tournaments, it might be like 60, like, it might be like 40 plus 20.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's
repaying, like, literally 50% rate.
Right, right. It's 33%. It's a ton. And like, you know, I mean, they kind of have to do that to operate.
Correct.
Because people will pay. You know, yeah, there's only, like, you know, a handful of people playing the tournament. And
that's the difference, right? Is live, it takes up a lot of resources.
Right.
So it's the only way the business model can survive.
Right.
And the whole purpose for these small buy-ins is just to get acquisition.
Right. And like you said, the recreational players don't care. They're going to come into town and they're going to play one tournament and they just want to have fun.
Right.
And it's who cares how much they win. Right.
Right.
Because it's $60.
Right. So at the acquisition level, they're not concerned with retention because the liquidity amongst that group is very high, right? They're all playing way beneath their capabilities money wise, the vast majority of them are anyway, because they're new to the game and they don't want to get washed. So mm-hmm. they want to learn cheap. And the house just says, okay, we're going to tax the shit out of you. That's fine. Online, these resources aren't
the holdup. You just click the button.
Right. There isn't a lot of back-end resource that is doing this.
The rate for everything can kind of be a flat fee if they wanted it to be.
Right. But they're preying upon the exact same mentality, right? These players want to learn cheap. Online is cheaper. You know, and you get to play it at scale. So now all these recreationals go on. They deposit their $1,000. It goes pretty quickly, whatever. They don't care. They see either stay or they don't. But they don't ever see the rake. They don't care that they're getting gouged, right? And as long as you have consumers that are uneducated and do not give a shit, you will have the ability to make more money.
It's like mm-hmm. the same thing as someone buying something from a store where the markup is like 1,500% or whatever.
Right.
You still bought it.
Right. And if there's no competitor to ever step in and offer it lower, if there's no educator out there to kind of step in or a regulator to step in and say, like, this is gouging, we're not going to allow it, it just happens because dumb money spends.
I don't think that there's ever going to be a time when people that run stables or sites are going to be on the same wavelength, right? Because a stable is trying to make money where the site is trying to make money.
Yep.
And they don't go hand in hand.
But I think Pad's point is that if you're not GG, if you're not the biggest site in the world, then stables are a necessary part to your ecosystem.
And there's an opportunity there.
Right. They're very necessary in getting events off. They're very necessary in infusing liquidity and all these positive things that come from it. But they also just like suck a lot back out.
And the GG stance now is we have enough of
we're
what
too big
we
to
need.
Fail. Fuck off.
We don't need you.
Exactly.
But if you're trying to grow, like when they were trying to grow, stables were important.
Exactly.
And now they're saying, hey, like that was great. Like we got some EV then, you got some EV then, but like.
Oh, they're bye. Judas.
Goodbye.
They're Judases, right?
30 pieces of the silver is a lot, man.
Right. It was they were a disciple for quite some time, and then a better price came along and they stabbed him right in the fucking back and said, let's move on. And honestly, like, again, I don't think it's good for the poker ecosystem. I don't think it's a good precedent to set, but I do think it's going to make them more money.
Well, not every site can do what GG did.
Correct.
Because not every site can be the leading site.
And as they move into a potential partnership with WSOP, potentially opening up to the United States in a regulated way, potentially moving into live and other things, I think we might just see them operate this online platform strictly with the recreational in mind, taking the maximum at every step along the way, and then maybe infusing some of that money into live marketing, into the United States marketing, the new markets.
Well, that's so what I guess the TLDR of that huge post was, is that we don't care about you.
Correct. Fully.
And it's kind of based from a business sense, but not based for a player where it's like, okay.
I think the biggest problem I have, I mean, I have concerns if GG does go this way. And it seems like they've been heading this direction for the last 5 years to begin with. And hiring ambassadors like Negreanu who are very quick to like echo this sentiment, the fuck the pros sentiment. It's very easy, man. Once you've made it, it's very easy to forget where you came from. You know, it's very easy to just like, fuck all you nerds. I don't care.
Is it Judas-like?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit?
I mean...
Turn it on the people because you made it?
I think he probably forgets how much help he had along the way. Whatever. I mean, you get that big, it's very difficult to maintain perspective. But anyway, the point that I'm trying to arrive at is, you know, if GG continues to head in this direction... And we do see that the market actually splinters between this model where it's a rec heavy, high rake, fuck the pros type of model, and then everybody else. It's going to be interesting to see what that does to the online landscape as a whole, because some of these other platforms might be encouraged to follow suit, right? Like, you know, we all love Stars for what they've been for 20 years, but it's not like they have a rich soul.
Well, Stars removed SNE, which was very anti-grinder.
Yeah, that was like two or three owners ago. I don't even know. It was when Amaya was the owner. Who knows who owns them now? I think
Stars
Tango
is still
owns
huge
them now.
Too, man.
Yeah, like, they're massive.
Like the Scoop 215 anniversary had like 60,000 entries.
But like, I don't think poker is a big part of their business model. I don't think they give a shit. I think it's like maybe a 1% of their gross revenue.
So does that mean that there's an opportunity for a different site to come along?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. Maybe this is where Phenom Poker inserts their hat in the ring and kind of leads with a player first type of model.
It's hard to do everything, right? It's hard to benefit the regs and the recreationals.
It's
at the same time, you know, because you're trying to protect your whales.
I think we all know that the business model as it stands is broken, right? Like the acquisition model is just very broken. It just keeps getting more and more cutthroat. You want to get into a good game, bring somebody, and that somebody has to be definitely losing, you know? I don't know. I'm not really sure the direction that it's going to take, but I'm interested to follow because I think that the brash nature through which Poker OK is kind of leading with this,
kind saying of feels like smug.
Literally, fuck you guys.
Very smuggy.
Yeah.
Very much so. Very much so. I'll be very interested to see how that then moves forward. And like, look, we can't ignore the fact that it does solve some problems, right? Like, a lot of the cheating scandals that we've covered over the past couple of years were very, very stable-based.
It takes 10 years to get off $1 million.
So that's kind of my biggest problem with it, is like, why shadow ban them in that regard? Why not just like give them the opportunity to cash everything out now if they so choose to want to do so?
And then instill this in a couple months or whatever?
Yeah, or like, you know, give them like one big cash out option. And then like
cash out and leave, and then that's what they want anyways.
Right, exactly. Like holding their money ransom seems really shitty. Mm-hmm. It's like an especially big fuck you.
Yeah, when you come out with this now, not great. You know, like if someone has a bunch of money on the site and then this comes out and it's like, oh, I was part of a stable.
Well, it's also like in that last post, he's basically also like acknowledging that he's holding them hostage and saying like, well, if you get out of the stable and you can demonstrate that to us, we'll negotiate.
We can talk.
Well, we can talk. If you can show that you're playing on your own dime and all this other stuff, then we can work something out. We can increase those limits a bit. We can get you back up to 5K a day kind of thing, you know, which is scary, man. It's never have we been this connected to the higher ups of a site. And it's both good and bad, right? Like there being some level of transparency is really nice. But also, like, them just operating like the mob where we're all the henchmen, it's a weird place to be, you know? I don't know.
Awkward.
I don't know.
It's the more that, like, we talk about it, the more I kind of realize what's going on here, like, the full scope of the site versus the reg.
Yeah.
And being a reg, they're still going to play on the site because there's options are limited and GG still has such sick prize pools. It's almost like, okay, they're doing these things that are bad for the reg's bottom line, like having admin fees, having things along the lines like going to the Cove or whatever the Bahamas. And at the end of the day, they're like, hey man, there's a 10 million on this thing where the million's guaranteed for first and first got 1.5 million.
Yeah.
And then one of the regs, like shot to Bowie, like Bowie got second for 1.2, but it's like, at what point can you complain versus try to boycott and cut your own bottom line?
Right.
If Bowie says, oh, like, I don't want to play this tournament because the GGs are doing these things, he doesn't get to win 1.2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, it's different for Bowie. He's not as stable.
No.
They haven't attacked him yet.
No.
This is, like,
but are they? Like, in the sense of attacking regs, like, how are they going to go about it? To say you're winning too much, you're gone?
To be determined, man. Right?
You think that's what's going to happen? No, they won't do that.
Might do that. What's that famous poem or whatever?
It's like they came for...
First they came for the...
They didn't speak out.
And I didn't speak out because I was not.
Yep.
It's like first they came for the stables, then I did not speak out because I was not in a stable.
Right.
Then they came for the...
I think he posted that in the chat, actually. Like he made a joke of that.
Yeah, he kind of did.
He did that. Like then they came for the regs, and like I wasn't like the best reg, and then they came for the mid regs, and then they came after me, and there was no one else left or whatever.
Yeah. We'll still be here, Bowie.
Yep.
We'll still be here
to save you.
Championing the cause. Free Bowie. Free Bowie.
That's the thing. You got to get your money off before they do something about it.
I mean, that's got to be one of the hardest things too, right? Like, I'm not sure what everything looks like now with KYC and how different the sites are, but I imagine like getting money off, it at least should be a chore at this point, right? Like, it's relatively easy on WSOP, but it's because everything is right. Like, the second that I hit the cash out button, I also have a fucking IRS statement in my email, you know? And like, that's pretty reasonable. But when you're just dealing with an offshore, when you're dealing with like an offshore site like ACR or whatever, and it's just like, hey, why don't you pay me in this crypto coin sent to this Tumblr so that I can just wash this money completely? And they're just like all happy, like, sure. You know, I imagine for them, it's like, no, we want to keep the money on site. Like, let's make you jump through as many hoops as possible. We'll KYC you on the way out instead of on the way in.
Man, it's just the money crap. You gotta make the money before they get you.
It's scary because it really is going to prop up apps, right? Because everything is done agent to, it's all peer-to-peer. And that's a horrible way to fucking do business in this industry.
Yeah.
Peer-to-peer is like the easiest way to get scummed, to get rugged. Like, yeah. It's just going to happen over and over and over again. And there's no way to get around it. These apps are just going to come up and disappear time and time again. And we're all going to be the ones to take a bath. And it's going to be because we don't have a safer place to
play. Okay. I want to read the poem because I found it.
Okay, go ahead.
It's good. First, they came for the RTAers. And I did not speak out because I was not an RTAer. Then they came for preflop chartists, and I did not speak out because I was not a preflop chartist. Then they came for the bot rings, and I did not speak out because I was not a bot. Then they came for the admin fee dissidents, and I did not speak out because I was not an admin fee dissident. Then they came for the super users, and I did not speak out because I was not a super user. Then they came for the MDAers, and I didn't speak out. Although I did enjoy my large amount of data. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to protect my HUD.
That's good.
That's a good note to end on, I think. Thank you guys all so much for tuning in. Would love to hear your opinions on the landscape of online. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe. Let us know what you think in the comments below. GG and Poker OK should be doing with the stables. We'll be back at noon Pacific on Monday. Don't forget that we have an academy coming up at the end of May. We have a cash academy. That'll be May 25th to the 28th.
May 23rd to the
23rd to the 25th.
Yes.
And then the 28th to the 30th.
Nope. 27th to the 30th.
It's been a while since I plugged this one.
You know, it's okay because they can go to academy.software.io and they can see the dates right in front of them.
There you go. Hit hashtag academy. It'll give you all the info that I just fucked up. We'll be back noon Pacific Monday. We'll see you guys all then.
Peace.
Later, squad.